from KQED.
This is the California Report. Good morning. I'm John Sepulvedo, and we begin with health news. California's vaccination rates are at an all-time high. Numbers out yesterday show 96% of kindergartners have received the required vaccinations, a 3% increase from last year. Dr. Gil Chavez is with the California Department of Public Health.
Vaccination requirements for school entry are meant to maintain high vaccination coverage that protects children and communities from vaccine-preventable diseases such as measles, mumps, and rubella.
It was a measles outbreak in 2015 at Disneyland that sparked the push to tighten the state's vax laws. The law took effect this school year, and it banned parents from using the personal belief exemption to opt out of vaccines. That law is being challenged in court. Let's go now to Canada and join a group of California lawmakers on a fact-finding trip focused on the country's single-payer healthcare system. That's because California lawmakers have a plan to introduce single-payer healthcare in this state. The plan is authored by L.A. County Senator Ricardo Lara, who joins us now from Canada. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
Have you learned anything this week that has encouraged you about the chances of bringing universal health care to California?
Yes. You know, it's been quite interesting to study both the Quebec province model and the Toronto province model. You know, the fascinating thing underlying with all Canadians is that we've seen is that there is a sense that healthcare should be a human right, something that should be provided by the government, which is a very different sentiment in the United States. And so what we've seen is a basic reasonable level of care, and then any complementary care is done through either employer insurance or private insurance. Secondly, I would tell you that both provinces have told us that this is that providing this kind of universal health care is really half of their provincial budget. And so that also was really telling for us to see how really costly it is to provide this service.
You don't have details in your plan as of yet how this would be paid for. Are you any closer to that?
So we wanted to come and, you know, wait into this Canada trip, and we also have a study ongoing in terms of the fiscal impacts of this bill. But we wanted to not unveil that yet until we actually came up to Canada and really have conversations of how in the future lawmakers here in Canada are going to control the cost of healthcare. And so, you know, the last study that was actually made to study a model like this in California was 10 years ago. And so we know that our study would be updated and will be ready in a couple of weeks. And again, you know, allow us to have that conversation with other lawmakers, with the governor, and with the California taxpayer, and see if this is a way that, you know, they feel we should head. And that's the other kind of different thing for us, too, is, you know, we're going to have that conversation with the with Californians and see if, you know, if government should play this role to be able to provide health care for everyone. And I think we, in a sense, as Californians, understand that there should be some sort of universal access. But to what extent, what level, and what type of care are we talking about? So those are the conversations we're having here in Canada and learning a lot from our fellow colleagues.
And just very, very briefly, Senator, is this a publicity stunt or a travel junket?
No, I mean, there's other ways we could be spending our spring break. And if you see our agenda, we are fully booked all day doing important meetings. And so I think it's important. I mean, as an important state of California, we also need to look at what other countries are doing. And this is something that we're serious about and that we want to be able to demonstrate that we can do this and we can do it well. And so that takes time and that takes give us the opportunity to look at what other models in other countries are doing.
Senator Ricardo Lara joined us from Canada. Have a good trip. Have a safe trip.
Thank you.
Moving on now. Tax day is now less than a week away, and California has a message for low-income filers. Don't leave money on the table. KPCC's Ben Bergman explains.
When Guadalupe Viejas, a single mother of two who lives in South Los Angeles, filed her taxes recently, she received a pleasant surprise. She got a refund of more than $6,000 thanks to earned income tax credits.
I got too excited because I needed some extra help.
Viejas only found out about the credit because she got help from a new L.A. County-sponsored initiative to help educate low-income residents about taxes. She used her refund to help pay rent on a new apartment, and to buy furniture, a microwave, and a TV. This is the second year the state has offered an earned income credit of up to $2,700 with lower income requirements than the federal one, but 4 out of 10 eligible taxpayers didn't take advantage of it on their 2015 returns, and the state says even fewer are claiming it on their 2016 taxes. People like Audrey Casillas with the Koreatown Youth and Community Center are trying to get the word out. Her favorite part of the job is telling people they have a refund check coming their way.
They're blown away.
And a friendly reminder, tax day this year is April 18th. That's next Tuesday. For the California Report, I'm Ben Bergman in Los Angeles.
It's been more than 50 years since a nuclear bomb went off above ground. And today, when researchers or scientists or military officers want to know how an atomic weapon will explode, they have to rely on computer models. And those computer models, in turn, rely on old films of nuclear explosions to get their data. Well, those old films are falling apart. But one man at the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory in Northern California is trying to restore and share what remains of the atomic test film shot by the U.S. during that time. KPBS reporter Steve Walsh caught up with the guy doing the job.
After nuclear weapons brought World War II to an abrupt end, the U.S. wanted to understand the full reach of its new super weapon. We knew these weapons dropped from a bomber could level a Japanese city, but
could we kill a modern submarine with an underwater A-bomb? In theory, yes. But what would be the fatal range? Could the attack crew get away?
Until the partial nuclear test ban treaty finally ended above-ground testing in 1963, the federal government routinely satisfied its curiosity with tests like Operation Wigwam, an underwater explosion which happened 500 miles off the coast of San Diego back in May of 1955.
The seismic shock was easily detected all over the world. At HR, plus 8 to 10 minutes, the shock wave hit the mainland of Lower California. At 1312 Pacific Daylight Time, a Greek ship just off the Golden Gate radioed the Coast Guard asking, has San Francisco just been hit by a severe earthquake?
Greg Spriggs is a nuclear physicist with Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. I talked to him on a laptop from his lab. As a boy, Spriggs saw one of the last of these above-ground tests at Johnson Island in the Pacific.
It was performed at 10 o'clock at night, and it lit the sky up like it was noon. And it took about 15 minutes for all the different colors to go back to being pitch black again. It was basically an artificial aurora borealis.
For the last 5 years, Spriggs has supervised a project to restore and declassify films from the 210 above-ground nuclear tests the U.S. conducted from 1945 till they were banned in 1963. He found some are in terrible shape, like a few of the first tests from the Manhattan Project.
Some of the Trinity films, which of course were very valuable in terms of history, and those films had turned to powder, basically, and they're now useless.
Though it's more than history, for scientists, these films are the only record of what happens when you detonate a nuclear weapon on the face of the Earth.
These films contain a plethora of data that's very fundamental to nuclear weapon effects.
Spriggs has located 6,500 of the estimated 10,000 films. The first batch of footage was released on YouTube in March. For the California Report, I'm Steve Walsh in San Diego.
Support for the California Report comes from Personal Capital, offering online financial tools to manage and track accounts from investments to retirement planning. Personal Capital, serving over 1 million people at personalcapital.com. Barracuda Networks, cloud-ready firewalls engineered for today's next-generation business networks. Learn more at barracuda.com/cloud-ready. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org.
Roger Hedgecock is a former mayor of San Diego, and he, like so many other San Diego mayors, had a term plagued by scandal and scrutiny. In a campaign finance scheme, Hedgecock would be found guilty of 1 count of conspiracy and 12 counts of perjury. Well, move forward 30 years, and Roger Hedgecock's testimony will be key in proving a lawsuit being brought by him and his wife. Roger and Sydney Hedgecock are suing the city of San Diego because she tripped and fell on a cracked sidewalk and ruptured one of her breast implants. Hedgecock says since his wife's breast implant ruptured, he has suffered the loss of support, service, love, companionship, society, affection, relations, and solace from his wife. That's according to the suit. The couple is seeking, quote, well over $25,000. And this has been the California Report for Thursday, April 13th, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm John Sepulveda. Have a great day.